Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae, simple and plain like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirtbag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap, catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Mike, check.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to a glorious installment, another one of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and I am excited to be with you this and every time we grace the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. I am joined this evening once again by my wonderful producer, our wonderful producer, a gentleman by the name of Chip Williams. He was doubtful last week, downgraded to out with illness. He's back, and we're excited to have him for the quick turnaround as we usually air our live recordings on Thursday nights. Chip, we're glad to have you back here for the quick turnaround this week.
Oh, man, it's so good to be back. Good to be talking to you guys again. Yeah, I was definitely under the weather, and as much as I wanted to pull a Michael Jordan and, do the radio show with the flu and little stomach issue, I didn't think you all wanted to hear that as you were talking. So I sat it out, but you guys did a great job as always, and I'm excited to be back.
It's going to be a great show, even better because Chip is with us along the way. And the first part of our show, we always know, is going to be successful because the managing editor of Grizzly Bear Blues Live, which is a wonderful part of the GrizzlyBearBlues.com family, Mr. Chris Faulkner. I didn't mess it up this time, boss.
You didn't. You never let me down, Joe. it's going to... It's fun to be where we're at right now, both with the site and the show. We're getting great guests. We've got plenty to talk about on the site and on the show. And thankfully, the Grizzlies are coming off a win, and so the show is going to have a nice little victorious tint to it.
It absolutely is, and there's going to be an eye to the postseason kind of theme to tonight's program. We'll talk more about the rundown here in a moment. First thing first, way to get in touch with the program. You can follow us on Twitter at GBBLive. Interact and talk with the show, whether you're listening to the live broadcast Tuesday night or you're listening to the podcast later in the week. If there's a segment you particularly liked, if there's a point that one of us or one of our guests makes that really kind of jolted you and made you think, or maybe you just think I'm crazy and I need to stop loving Jeff Green, please shoot me a tweet. Happy to talk with you at GBBLive. Or if you want to get personal with it, my personal account is at Joe Mullinax. You can follow our producer, Chip Williams, at Chip Williams Jr. And our first guest, as always, the voice you heard before mine, Mr. Chris Faulkner, the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. You can follow him on Twitter at FaulknerMemphis. You can also get into the chat room during the live broadcast. Please do so. We want to bring you in. We want it to be interactive. If you have a question for us, I'll post some questions maybe that you might have or some things that we want you to reply to in that chat room. Log into the chat. If you're not as comfortable with Twitter, please, we want it to be an interactive program. The first segment, as always, as I've been saying, Chris Faulkner joins Chip and I for Grizzly Bear News, the first segment of the show every week. We're going to break down some great work that you should check out on the site, as well as talk about the week that was in Grizz Nation. About as backwards and banged up a 2-1 as you can get to as the Grizzlies pull out wins against the Lakers and in Chicago. And those two wins sandwich a New Orleans loss. We'll talk about those games. We'll talk about how Mike Conley running looks like it hurts right now, and that'll tie in with the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day. And we were talking before the show a little bit, and it's a rotation tweak that everybody has noticed, or at least has begun to notice, and it involves Jeff Green and maybe a little less John Lewis, unfortunately for Chip. We'll talk about that as well in the Grizzly Bear News segment. In segment two, a shorter segment two than usual, because a gentleman by the name of Tom Lorenzo, one of the godfathers of Grizzly Bear Blues, is kind enough to join us in the middle of a Brooklyn Nets game. The Brooklyn Nets are playing as we speak, or they're about to start playing as we speak. Tom agreed to come on the show, even though the game was going on, but out of respect to Tom, condensed second segment. So only three points of conversation for Tom, other than the usual four or five that we do with our guests. We're going to look at the East in particular and see if there's any teams that are really scared of the Grizzlies, if they all are, if none of them are. And then, of course, we'll check in with our good friend, Lionel Hollins, the new coach of the Brooklyn Nets, who, of course, was formerly of the Memphis Grizzlies. In the final segment tonight, Kelly Dwyer of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog over at Yahoo Sports. We're excited to have him on. He's going to be a great guest. And he's really going to do a good job running down the natural the national perspective. And that's something that has always fascinated with me with these Memphis Grizzlies. It seems like the national media, a good bit of the time, doesn't quite know what to make of Memphis, whether it be their slowed-down, grinded-out basketball or way of playing, I should say, whether it's the Jeff Green trade. You know, there are some people locally, including Chris Harrington, who we've had on the show in the past, who have kind of said, the Jeff Green trade hasn't been that great, but you listen to national media guys and you would think that they had traded for Jeff Green, or not Jeff Green, but, you know, Kevin Durant, in terms of how great they thought the move was for the Grizzlies. So we'll talk about perspective, we'll talk about the Western Conference playoff picture, and then the idea of what a superstar is and whether or not Marc Gasol truly fits that bill. Lots of interesting topics of conversation. Lots of great guests, lots of great Grizzlies talk for you on this Tuesday night. But before we get to all of that, as always, we begin with the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. His name is Chris Faulkner, and this is Grizzly Bear News. Mr. Faulkner, good sir, if you would please give the folks, whether they're listening live or to the podcast archive version and on iTunes now, as we are a member of the iTunes family for podcast subscriptions, however they're listening to the program, what are some things that they can check out on the site tonight and in future nights or days as they listen?
Absolutely. There's plenty going on this time of the year, you know, with so many games in the month of March. The NBA, but there's also a lot of action going on with the Grizzlies D League. And earlier, probably right after the last show, I did a little bit feature on Russ Smith and sort of how he's developing with Iowa Energy. And everyone should be pretty excited about Russ Smith. The guy is very talented, and he's also got a very nice head on his shoulders as well. And he's showing the ability to score, and he's got a really nice natural knack for the game, both defensively and offensively. He's been shooting the three pretty well in the past three games, shooting 13 of 22 over the last three. And he's also a guaranteed follow back on Twitter for those of you that get into that. He'll talk to you as well. He's very interactive with the fans, and I think he's a good businessman, just how he's marketing himself. And I think he could be a big part of the Grizzlies going forward, but perhaps a part of the new young core that the Grizzlies are trying to develop right now that they actually finally have, it seems, for once and forever. The energy actually playing right now on YouTube, that's something that, you know, Grizzlies fans on, man, it seems like a lot of the times the energy play at the exact same time as the Grizzlies, and that can be pretty annoying, especially on my Twitter timeline, trying to discern between those two. But you can watch energy games on YouTube for free. They broadcast all of them live right there. So aside from Russ Smith, Jarnell Stokes, also, you know, under contract with the Grizzlies, has been wiping the floor at the D-League, pretty much being a double-double machine. looking really big out there compared to everyone else, honestly. Just start getting more comfortable with the NBA game. That's been exciting. Elsewhere on the site, you know, the game coverage with standing, we also, man, if you guys missed it, the moment that Zach Randolph had at the Lakers game at home in Memphis with the Iwo Jima war veteran Jimmy Keep, man, that was plucking at my heartstrings. Still does, honestly. You should check it out. I've got a vine up on the side of it from back when it was circulating, but that was a really special moment. Just you got to make you respect the guy like Zach that much more. And also really awesome, cool that there is a Iwo Jima war veteran living in Memphis, and he's a huge Grizzlies fan. That just is kind of cool in and of itself, really. You know, that Lakers game, that was nice to see Zach and Tony get going in that. Made it way, way more interesting than it should have been, but that was, I mean, pretty much everyone saw that coming. In spite of the Grizzlies, I think, you know, they swept the Lakers this season for the first time ever, and, you know, wiped them up pretty well over the past few years, but most of those games seemed like they've been pretty close, so that wasn't anything that people were that surprised about. The New Orleans game, however, I was surprised that they, you know, started like they did and got up that much on New Orleans, but my gosh, that was disappointing to see that just crumble away in the way that it did. You don't mind necessarily losing to teams that do extraordinary things, but when you know, when it's self-inflicted, it kind of hurts a bit more. But thankfully, the Grizzlies were able to get back on track against Chicago. And finally got to see Mark Gasol get the better Pal. That was pretty awesome. And I've got a vine up on the front page of the site right now of an incredibly timed shot. This is actually, the vine is not a cut and edited vine. It's just the straight feed from the television of Pal Gasol just visibly, like, you can tell the guy is steaming. Like, he's just gotten owned by Mark, and he's shaking his head in disgust, and immediately the camera cuts to Mark, who is obviously laughing at his older brother's despair, which is a sweet moment for many in that situation, I'm sure. It was nice to see Mark finally. I think he's gotten a couple over on Pal in the past, but it's been a minute since Mark's really put it to his older brother in a game, and it was nice to see that. And see Mark lead the Grizzlies to the win in just amazing fashion. I mean, he looked like the Mark that we all kind of fell in love with the first month of the season. So it's nice to see that he's obviously still capable of putting up those kind of performances, whether or not, you know, he asserts into that role on a permanent basis. I imagine we're going to start to see more of that Mark Gasol going forward, and especially when we get into April, ramping up for the playoffs. But other news, today we also found out that Jamal Franklin might be getting another NBA chance here soon. He's with the LA Defenders in the D-League right now, but Woj tweeted out earlier that he's due for a call-up, so that'll be interesting to see where he ends up and how he does. I imagine it will be with a team that's not contending. And also we saw the bad side of Hassan Whiteside. Was it last night or the other night? Yeah, last night, I believe. But, you know, guys, there's a lot of talk, has been even now still, about whether or not the Grizzlies made a mistake in not signing Whiteside after he spent training camp and some time with the Iowa Energy with the Grizzlies. And we all knew that there was something, there's some reason that the Grizzlies didn't just jump on that after seeing his production with Miami. But my gosh, what he did to Kelly Olynyk would have been, you know, jail time if it hadn't been under the context of playing a professional sport. So, Joe, what do you think, man? Do you still regret the Grizzlies not getting Hassan Whiteside under contract?
Well, to be honest, I never fully regretted it, even when Whiteside-a-mania was at its peak. Clearly, it's tailed off a little bit, but I never really regret it because the minutes weren't there for him. The minutes just weren't there. You got Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph, each of which are going to command 32, 33 minutes a night on average. Then you've got one of the best, if not the best, backup bigs in the NBA in Kostas Koufos, who's going to eat up some of that time. Plus, they had a guy in John Luehr at the time when they made the cut of Whiteside that they thought could be more productive as that stretch four. Nice compliment to Koufos in terms of athletic ability and ability to space and hit from range. So I'm not that surprised. I'm not that let down. And in hindsight, obviously with the events of Whiteside going full brute against Mr. Olynyk, it's a situation where I think that it just kind of confirms what we already knew and that the Grizzlies made the right choice. Yes, it may have stung a little bit to watch from afar and see the numbers that he was putting up, but you had to put it in perspective. He had to put up those numbers because there was nobody else in Miami. Chris Bosh got hurt and injured, obviously with his health concerns, even before Bosh went down, whether it be Josh McRoberts or other bigs. They had issues, and there were minutes there for Whiteside. There weren't going to be minutes here in Memphis for him. So I wasn't that upset about it. I'll bring in Chip Williams and ask him the same question that Chris Faulkner just asked me. You watch Whiteside and what he did to the Boston Celtics. Obviously, attitude problem. There's been buzz from, you know, Chris Harrington and others talking about how this was one of the reasons the Grizzlies released Whiteside, a concern about outside of basketball issues, maybe some character flaws. Does this make you feel better that Whiteside is not a Grizzly, Chip?
Maybe a little bit, yeah. You know, I kind of feel like, you know, along the lines of the thinking that you guys have done, that, you know, there just wasn't going to be any minutes available for Hassan Whiteside here in Memphis, no matter which way you looked at it. I mean, Hassan Whiteside is a legitimate true center. He's not a backup power forward, and you can't really, I don't know, the Twin Towers lineup with him and Costa, I just don't think that something like that would ever really work. It just really clogs up the paint. So, yeah, there just really was not any kind of spot for him here in Memphis. So they had to let him go. I was hoping that, you know, maybe he could sit around in the D-League on the Iowa Energy for a little while and maybe revisit it this summer if, you know, Costa walks. But, you know, I'm happy for him that he's doing so well in Miami. But, yeah, he certainly is not a guy that's afraid to throw a punch or two if he has to. He's definitely got a little bit of an edge to him. I don't know if you can call that a character concern, but it seems like it is. So we'll see how it works out for him in Miami. And how about another former Grizzly, if you want to call him that, Michael Beasley? He's played okay in Miami as well. He's averaging 11 points a game in the 7 games he's played for the Heat. He hasn't done it very efficiently, but I feel like right now if you're the Miami Heat, you go find every player that used to play for the Grizzlies and start offering them 10-day contracts because it's worked out so far.
Someone find Gilbert Arenas right now, okay? He's ready. He's finally agent zero, ready to reheat up and give what the Grizzlies thought he would a couple of years ago. But in all seriousness, you look at the Memphis Grizzlies and we go from one former Grizzly point guard to the current best one who is struggling at the moment. And it hurts to say that. I tweeted out last night during the game, the Grizzlies-Bulls game, watching Mike Conley at this point is like watching Rocky get the tar beat out of him and then eventually find a way to win. Mike Conley is an amazing story in terms of his ability to fight through whatever is ailing him, whether it be mental, physical, whatever is going on. But he has struggled. There's no doubt about that. In the last 10 games, Mike Conley shooting 38.6%. That is well below his 44.5% average on the season. He is not shooting the basketball well in his last 5 games, in particular from 3. He is 27.8% in the last 5 games, which is well below his season average of 38.5, almost exactly 11 points below. So it's a situation where Mike Conley is really struggling, and this is one of the things that frustrates me so much about the Jeff Green conversation, Chris. People like to point and choose and make scapegoats that are members of Grizzlies fandom, and that's okay. Obviously, fans are allowed to think and boo and cheer and do whatever they want, but there's so many times that it's a scapegoat, whether it's been Ed Davis in the past, whether it's been a Quincy Pondexter, whether it's been, you know, in fairness, Zach Randolph at times on the opposite end of the spectrum from folks like me. Sometimes I certainly am not perfect. I may have put a little bit too much blame on Zach. But Zach, Rudy, all up and down the line, there's always been scapegoats for the Grizzlies in the eyes of Grizzlies fans. And Jeff Green seems to have gotten that mantle post-trade when we have to, as bloggers, writers, fans, whatever, be able to sit here and say, a guy who wants to be an all-star the past 10 games has barely looked like a fully functioning, below-average NBA point guard. And we know that's not what Mike Conley is. No one's calling for Mike Conley to be benched permanently for a Nick Kolathis or Beno Udrih. But we're starting to see a trend in poor play, and it should be worrying folks, Chris.
It is worrying because it, you know, the way Mike plays at his best, and that requires a good deal of physicality. He's put on that extra muscle in the past few years to be able to go at the rim physically and finish through it, and that's has become, you know, a huge part of why he was considered an all-star snub. Was, you know, that ability that, you know, Derrick Rose sort of had made famous recently, that just violent explosions to the rim. Mike's really good at that. Maybe not going up vertically, but his touch off the glass had been phenomenal. And it's you have to appreciate where he's coming from as a player and as a person, the wanting to play through it, but my gosh, here, I'll go ahead and say right now, Mike, if you're listening, I'll go ahead and speak for all Grizzlies fans, apologize in advance, but Mike, we believe you. We know how badass you are. We've seen it for years now. You don't have to play to prove anything to anyone, at least not as far as fans go right now. I would imagine that would go for his teammates as well, seeing what he's doing. You have John Lewis helping him up off the bench. They obviously understand what's going on. One of my worst fears right now is to say that the Grizzlies go into the playoffs this year with a 70% Mike Conley, and And if the Grizzlies don't, you know, make it to the finals, make it to the Western Conference Finals, that's the stain that's always put on the season, the punctuation of Mike Conley being injured and not being able to provide the Grizzlies with what they needed to get as far as they wanted in the playoffs. And, you know, we've got a slate of games coming up right now, Joe, that is favorable for Mike Conley kind of taking a break. There's obviously no easy nights in the NBA, especially for how the Grizzlies play. But you're looking at a few games coming up here now at Boston, at the Wizards. Then you host the Bucks and the Nuggets, and then go back on the road to the Pistons. That is a much more, you know, light. You know, a light load compared to what comes up at the end of the month when you end up, you know, going up against the Cavaliers and the Warriors and the Spurs, and then top it off with the Kings, which, despite the record, is a team that's just given the Grizzlies fits this season. So, we're running out of time now to rest Mike Conley. The end of the season, there's a lot of, you know, potential implications there going up against the Thunder and New Orleans and the Clippers and the Warriors again right at the end of the season. There's no telling what those games might mean, and you want to have a full array of your roster going into that point in the season anyway, just to get ready. You know, you want to be primed for the playoffs when they do start. So I feel like it's now the time to rest Mike Conley if you're going to. If you're not, then well, screw it. That the world have to live with the consequences of whatever Mike Conley can give. And, you know, I wouldn't be shocked that he played through injury and looked completely amazing in the playoffs. You know, I wouldn't put it beyond the guy at all, but you just talking about giving the Grizzlies the best chance to do what we want them to do in the playoffs, it seems like it makes sense to give Mike a rest whether or not he wants it or not.
Again, you're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. That was just there. That was Chris Faulkner, the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Be sure to follow him on Twitter, at FaulknerMemphis. This is his weekly Grizzly Bear News segment. And you make interesting points about Mike Conley's toughness. Nobody is questioning that. I do not throw around the Rocky Balboa comparison lightly. All right, this guy is someone that I would, as a former athlete, as a high school coach, I would love to have this guy on my team. I'll go into the dark alley, whatever metaphor or scenario you want to throw out there. Mike Conley's a guy that I'm willing to go to war with. But at the same time, there comes a point, Chip, and Chris alluded to this, they're running out of time to rest these guys. And Mike Conley, looking at him physically, is the one that you can almost certainly make him the best argument for resting. Marc Gasol has lost weight. He's been more durable this season. He looks like he's getting back and hitting his stride. He's been the leading scorer for both teams in the past six games, in three of the last six games. He has been the leading scorer in the entire game. He's starting to get back into it. Zach Randolph has looked more engaged and more active. Heck, even Jeff Green seems to be fitting in the flow of this new rotation tweak where he gets the start, but he's the first sub. Tony Allen comes in for him maybe 5 or 6 minutes into the game, and then Green comes in and gets some backup power forward minutes, eating into the time that John Luehr used to get, which has been a great use of him so far. It seems like he's much more comfortable in that role. But those guys are starting to hit their stride again, whereas Mike Conley is starting to cool off, and it looks like physically he's fading. Do you think it's time for Mike Conley to sit and rest up?
Absolutely, I do. Mike has just not been the same. It seems like for a while now, we haven't really had just a ton of kind of vintage Mike Conley games, you know. I was looking here, the last time he scored 20 points was February 8th, and he's had several games in between then where he hasn't even reached 10 points. So, you know, that's not the Mike Conley that the Grizzlies need come playoff time. They need him fully healthy and ready to go. And if that means giving him a few days off here over the next week or two, then you do it. Because you look at what the Grizzlies have backing up Mike Conley and Nick Calathes and Beno Udrih. I mean, that 2 and 3 point guard punch with those two guys, I'd put it up against any backup and third string point guard in the NBA. It's two of the best, two guys that that are ready to play, and that they've proven this season that they're great basketball players. And I was looking too as well, Mike Conley has played every game except for four this season, and the Grizzlies are 4-0 when Mike Conley has not played. So it's not one of these scenarios where I think the Grizzlies are 4-5 when Zach Randolph doesn't play. It's not like, you know, they just absolutely fall off a cliff when Mike Conley doesn't play. Now I get it, four games, small sample size, but in those four games, they've actually outscored their opponents by 63 points. So they've gotten some pretty convincing wins without Mike Conley, and they can survive a few, three, four, five games, however many games you want to give Mike off. They can survive that stretch with probably close to a, you know, I don't know, 4-1, 3-1 record, something like that. So I don't think you'll fall off the face of the earth, and I think that it'll pay dividends down the road. As you'll remember, you know, Tony Allen last season missed several games, and I think a lot of that, him missing those games and him not playing, a lot of what he did to Kevin Durant in the playoffs may be traced back to that, where he was rested, ready to go come playoff time because he was able to sit out a few games. So, yeah, I think this Grizzlies team outside of Mike Conley has played well for the most part these last few weeks. They just got to get their point guard, you know, back on board, back healthy, back playing at the level that I think everyone knows he can.
And it ties into our Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day. Mike Conley was the subject. If you were Coach Yeager, this is the question that I tweet out on show days every time we have a show, a question of the day. You answer the show, you get on the show. And the question was, if you were Coach Yeager, would you sit and rest Mike Conley? And for how long? Jonah, who does a great job responding, Jonah Jordan, one of our contributors at GVB, very appreciative of Jonah and his listening. Hopefully he chose to stay in and listen and not go out and get food. Jonas says, yeah, sit him until the Trailblazers game on March 21st, so that would give him maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks off. He needs it no matter what, he says. Three Shades of Blue contributor Steve Danziger, follow him at Stevie Danziger. Yes, plus, I guess it would depend on how good and bad the team does without him for a game or two. If we can tread water, I sit him a week, then reevaluate. And I think that's kind of where I'm leaning. I'll talk more about that here in a moment. Anthony Sane, former guest on the show, great guest on the show, loyal listener, appreciated Sane. He says, at Sane Asylum, I would start him every game he wants to play and then just give him minutes according to how he's looking. If he's off, sit him. Also makes sense. Andrew Howell at Andrew Howell 18 says, no, it's too late. We're in the last stretch and the team is starting to gel. Everyone needs to be on the same page. Finally, Adam Rubrum, great listener as always, another Grizzly Bear Blues contributor. I would sit him and Zeebo on some of these back-to-backs and a few games in the last week if we have nothing to gain. Fine with sitting at Boston. So kind of a hodgepodge there of opinions. And Chris, we'll get you out of here on this. If we decide to sit Mike Conley, all right, we pull out our big boy shoes and we put our foot down and we say, Mike, I don't care if you like it or not. I'm making a decision that's for the betterment of the team. I'm sitting you. How do you handle it? Do you do it like on a game-by-game basis, or do you just shut him down for a week and a half and say, we'll see you towards the end of the month?
That's interesting, taking it by a game-by-game basis. And, you know, I'm no medical professional, so I can't really speak to any specific science there. But the way, you know, the way Mike's still a young guy, giving him a game off when he might normally not have it and giving him a chance to do other things that will actually improve his physical health on that day, you know, that could, one game could make a big difference for Mike Conley, I guess, is what my point is. And if you're able to see results like that, it would make sense to kind of pick and choose your games going the rest of the season. You obviously want to have the sort of chemistry that the Grizzlies have shown throughout the season at their best points going into the playoffs. So, and it seems like Jaeger and the whole team, obviously Mike Conley particularly, cares about that and cares about the mentality of the team is hell-bent on, you know, playing through whatever it seems like. Every player on this team is somewhat of a warrior, but I like that idea, Joe, taking specific games and not necessarily just saying, you know, blocking off a period of time and say, hey, we're going to sit you here. But the Grizzlies have probably have the medical technology and staff to evaluate it game to game. And that's, you know, Robert Parrott talks about competitive advantages, and that sort of management of the team is something that the Grizzlies should be able to do given the resources that Robert has. So it'd be good to see that.
It bears watching moving forward. There's no doubt about that. And Mike Conley more than likely will continue to play, and Mike Conley will certainly continue to have a valiant, valiant effort. Nobody is questioning the mental toughness of him or basically any other of these Grizzlies. I mean, Jeff Green being the most recent addition, but that dude has a scar down his chest showing what he's been through in terms of heart issues and returning to the NBA. Toughness is not a problem with the Memphis Grizzlies. That's beyond a shadow of a doubt. And it's going to be interesting to see how that toughness relates to wins both now and in the future. In the past, it's done the Grizzlies good, but once you hit the playoffs, man, it's a different animal. And that is starting to get, we're starting to turn into that focus with about 19 games or so left in the regular season. Chris, as always, thank you, sir, for coming on the opening segment. And you have a little bit of a GBB Live break. We'll be back March 19th, but obviously plenty of work to do for the site to keep you busy.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about when we come back. Hopefully the Grizzlies have secured a playoff spot by then and are hopefully, you know, comfortably in second place and can afford to give some people some nights off. because they don't have to put so much value on each game. So that's my hope, Joe, and hope you guys have a great show. Appreciate Tom coming on. Always good to have a SB Nation brother on the show. So I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Once again, that was Chris Faulkner, managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Be sure to follow him on Twitter, at FaulknerMemphis. As we transition into segment two, I do want to give a quick shout-out here as we head in, as I said, at the top of the hour. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I'm joined by our wonderful producer, Chip Williams. And before I bring on our next guest, Audible.com, wonderful audiobook service powered by Amazon.com, over 150,000 titles to choose from, fiction, nonfiction, and everything in between. You can choose one of these great titles over at www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. You sign up for a membership to audible.com through that URL. You get a membership or an audiobook download from the jump that you can put into an MP3 player, burn into a CD, any other device, or put it on the cloud. Many different ways to enjoy the audiobook download. You get one of those every month that you're a member of audible.com. Plus, with your membership and with your fee that you pay to initially get the start with Audible, you help Grizzly Bear Blues Live make a donation to a cause that is near and dear to our hearts, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. I've been talking about making this donation for several weeks now. We are preparing to do that. We want you to be a part of that process with us. So once again, www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get yourself an awesome audible.com audiobook service and help an even better cause. Our next guest, and once again, shorter segment because literally as we speak, the Brooklyn Nets are playing the New Orleans Pelicans in Brooklyn. It's 27-23. It's a competitive game. The Pelicans are on a run, and it's going to be interesting to see how they hold up. To talk about the Eastern Conference and our old friend Lionel Hollins, he is a GrizzlyBearBlues.com godfather. He is currently of NetsDaily.com. His name is Tom Lorenzo. Tom, us Grizzlies folks can tell you those Pelicans are a tough out, even without some of their best players.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. I mean, the Nets got off to a little hot start here. It was 16-4 at one point, but of course, you know, it was early, and Pelicans are a good team, man. You know, you look at this team, Pelicans team that's fighting for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. I mean, if you put them in the Eastern Conference right now, you'd be talking about a contender for, you know, at least the Eastern Conference Finals. So, for sure, a tough out, but you know, the Nets are giving a little run here early on, so we'll see how it holds up.
And that is the amazing thing about the Western Conference versus the Eastern Conference, and it's kind of popular, whether it's on podcasts like this one or even national radio and television shows, to beat up on the Eastern Conference. I'm not interested in doing that right now, but it is crazy to think that the New Orleans Pelicans, if they were in the Eastern Conference, and they're one of those teams that maybe has a claim to it, like the Memphis Grizzlies do, maybe not as good of a claim, but if the Pelicans were in the East, they would be the sixth seed right now. They would be in front of Milwaukee, and Charlotte would be out of business as the nine seed if the Pelicans were in the East. But at the same time, if the Memphis Grizzlies were in the East, well, they'd still be the two seed. So not too much different, as Atlanta has completely run the show in the Eastern Conference for much of the season. But before we get to the East and the lay of the land there, Tom, and again, we appreciate you joining us in the middle of a Nets game. Very appreciative of that. Our old friend here in Memphis, Lionel Hollins, obviously a bitter end to an otherwise pretty sweet run of time in Memphis. Lionel had his detractors, but it's hard to argue against the results and the way that he helped ingrain a toughness and mentality and defensive structure in Memphis for these Grizzlies. How are things going with Lionel out there in the East and in Brooklyn, a media market that people thought that maybe he would struggle in?
Yeah, look, I mean, things aren't going well at all. I don't think it's ever got as bad in Memphis at any point as it is now in Brooklyn. And I think you're right. It's elevated, of course, based on the fact that, you know, the market itself, you're talking about going from, I believe it is 29th or even 30th in terms of market size in Memphis, to all of a sudden going to New York and playing in that market. So, you know, it is tough to struggle in a market like this. Jason Kidd saw it last year, as beloved as he was by Nets fans. You know, he saw that struggle and had a tough time with it. And Lionel's having a tough time with it. I mean, to his credit, he is doing what Lionel Hollins does. He's taking it in stride. He's not actually showing the struggle. But in terms of getting the team together and kind of rallying and putting out the best lineups and putting out the best rotation, he's not able to kind of find that. And, you know, he's having a tough time with the superstars, guys like Deron Williams, finding out the right system for someone like Brook Lopez, and really just kind of struggling and finding any rhythm. So right now you're looking at a Nets team that really there's very little hope in terms of having anything turn around. Even if they did slide into that eighth seed, you know, there's no optimism in terms of kind of picking off a first-round series. It's just right now a matter of them fighting for a playoff spot to just kind of save some face this season.
We're talking with Tom Lorenzo of NetsDaily.com. Make sure you follow Tom on Twitter, at Tom Lorenzo. And it really is a situation where you feel for Lionel because of those struggles. I'm not somebody who personally longs for the days of yesteryear with Lionel Hollins, but at the same time, he did good things as a Grizzlies coach. He's one of those guys that was great in the community, did a lot of great work with St. Jude and other organizations. So he's somebody who genuinely misses Memphis. He probably wishes he was still here, but I wish him well. It's been a struggle, like you said, and the Nets are still trying to find themselves. Obviously, that major blockbuster trade that they pulled off to get the likes of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce hasn't worked out. Neither of those guys are with the team anymore, and they're going to feel the ramifications of that move for years to come. Is that understood in Brooklyn? Does he kind of have a pass for the next year or two as he finds himself? Or is this a guy who could find himself on the chopping block sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I don't think, again, in this market, in this New York market, there's such thing as kind of passes. And not that I agree with it, but you know, there is an urgency, and it's especially with not only the size of the market, but the size of the payroll, the team that they've put together. You know, they put together this team to win now. And like you said, with the Boston trade, with the Joe Johnson trade a few years ago, with re-signing of Deron Williams, they put this team together to win now. And because they're not winning now, you know, they mortgaged their future in order to win now, and they don't have that future. You know, they're having to tout the fact that, okay, they got Thaddeus Young, 26-year-old, certainly a talented kid, good skill, but they have to kind of point to these little minor victories, the fact that, you know, Markel Brown is playing well and Corey Jefferson had a nice game. But other than that, there's no kind of blueprint in terms of a defined path for this Nets team, and that's what the struggle is that they put it all in, all their chips on the table to win now, and they're just not winning. So they're kind of struggling for that identity and struggling to find a way to kind of sell this story of, yeah, hey, we didn't win, but we have a plan for the future, because right now they don't really even have that plan for the future.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Once again, I am your host, Joe Mullinax, hanging out with my producer, Chip Williams, and our guest at this time, Tom Lorenzo of NetsDaily.com. Again, follow Tom on Twitter at Tom Lorenzo. The Eastern Conference itself, the standings, the lay of the land, so to speak. If you look at it as it stands, you have Atlanta as the number one seed. Then you have the Cleveland Cavaliers, number two, and rising fast. They're not going to catch Atlanta, but you'd imagine they'll be steady in that two seed. Toronto's probably a lock for the three due to all the injuries with Chicago. Chicago, who the Grizzlies just played Monday night, is the four seed. Washington's the five. Maybe Washington and Chicago flip spots again because of those injuries, but it's hard to see Chicago sliding past five. Then you have Milwaukee, who seems solidly entrenched in the six seed, and then Indiana, Charlotte, Miami, Boston, and these Brooklyn Nets that you cover, all within three games of the seven and eight seeds. So it's an interesting lay of the land in the East. It doesn't sound too promising for the Nets. But the fact that teams like Boston and Miami are still in it after all the injuries that they've suffered is pretty impressive. Oh, and by the way, the Indiana Pacers might be a pretty scary 7 or 8 seed if Paul George does indeed return this season and he's anything close to the All-NBA player that he was a season ago.
Yeah, it is interesting in the East, and I think the funny thing we look at is heading into the season, you look at a team like the Celtics, who, you know, for better or for worse, probably doesn't want to make the playoffs. You look at a team like the Milwaukee Bucks, who people said, great young talent, but maybe they're a year or two away. You know, you look at the team like the Pacers, who once Paul George went down, everyone said, all right, they're in the lottery. But, you know, they've managed to somehow stay afloat, and I think a lot of that, you know, aside from the Bucks are playing great this year relative to what the expectation was, you know, but teams are staying afloat. And then you have, you know, sadly, Brooklyn Nets sitting there who desperately want to make the playoffs and just can't seem to find their way in. But I think right now with the East, to me, you know, Atlanta's that top tier, Cleveland's just below in that second tier, and then there's everybody else. You know, I like Toronto. I think they have a very good team, but, you know, they're playing bad basketball right now. I think they're 2-8 in their last 10, so they're struggling. So it'll just be interesting to see kind of where that lands out. But I think right now, if you look at it, to me, you know, Atlanta's that one team right now that you got to look out for. And, of course, Cleveland, you can't discount them, but I still think they're kind of a notch right below the Atlanta Hawks in terms of, you know, how the teams are playing and in terms of how they match up against the Western Conference.
It is pretty amazing to look at the last 10 game records on a standings page, and you see the Memphis Grizzlies are 6-4, and sometimes Memphis Grizzlies fans, and I'll be honest, sometimes I can do this myself, you feel like the sky is falling after some of these losses, but the Grizzlies are 6-4 in their last 10, and you make a great point about Toronto being 2-8, the Wizards are 3-7, Milwaukee is 3-7. It certainly could be worse. And the Grizzlies are not suffering the free fall in the standings that others' teams are, like the Wizards, who looked like a potential NBA Finals candidate earlier in the season. Now they're kind of fading, and they'll be lucky to get out of the first round in the eyes of some. This Eastern Conference, you look at the layout, Tom, it's impressive, to say the least, what Atlanta has done. Obviously, Cleveland coming alive with LeBron James, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. It kind of looks like those two teams are heading to a showdown in the Eastern Conference Finals, potentially. But the Memphis Grizzlies, people in Memphis, fans of the Grizzlies around the country and around the world, are hoping that this is the year that they get to the NBA Finals. What is the perception of the Memphis Grizzlies by Eastern Conference teams? The Grizzlies play the Wizards this week, for example, and I live in the Washington, D.C. area, and they were talking about that game on the radio, and it's so interesting to hear the perspective of opposing teams and opposing areas and how they view the Grizzlies. So maybe if you want to give the Brooklyn perspective, or maybe if you think you can summarize the Eastern Conference as a whole, how are the Grizzlies perceived? Are they a legitimate contender in the eyes of the players in the East?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely think they are. And, you know, if you're looking for a Brooklyn perspective, I'll say this. I mean, if Lionel Hollins got a call today saying, hey, we want you back in Memphis, he'd call a timeout in the middle of the game and pack his stuff up and drive himself back to Memphis. I mean, you know, I think it's, you know, at this point, yeah, I think they're certainly perceived at that. You know, the thing is, as you guys know, and certainly, you know, I've been following the Grizzlies for quite some time, obviously, having worked on the site and straight out of Vancouver and Grizzly Bear Blues. But, like, you know, so my perspective is a little skewed and a little different, but I still think overall, you know, with the Grizzlies and what the battle's always been is for the longest time, and obviously Marc Gasol's kind of helping in this, and, you know, Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, but for the longest time they didn't have that guy you point to. You know, it wasn't necessarily must-watch in terms of the way they talk about Steph Curry now and James Harden and Russ Westbrook. You know, the Grizzlies still don't kind of get that recognition. But the thing is that as a team, as a system, you know, to me, it always does come down to being kind of San Antonio Spurs light in that, you know, they run a great system. They play terrific basketball on both sides of the court. You know, they're not going to come out there and blow you out 125-75. But, you know, the Grizzlies are a team that they execute down the stretch. They play great defense for 48 minutes. And, you know, they're a title contender. I think you look at it from an Eastern Conference standpoint, and right now you look at any of those teams almost from 1 down to 7 or 8 as teams that, yeah, they're going to be tough outs for anyone in the East. So I think, yes, the Grizzlies don't have the same kind of flash, the awe that a lot of the other teams in the Western Conference do. But I think overall they do get a ton of respect in terms of being a title contender. And I don't think any of the teams out here in the East would want to face the Grizzlies in the NBA Finals.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am the producer, Chip Williams, joined as always by the host, Joe Mullinex. And we're talking with Tom Lorenzo right now. And Tom, just kind of keeping that conversation going, in your opinion, who in the East, you know, say the Grizzlies reach the NBA Finals, coming out of the East, who do you think would give the Grizzlies the most trouble?
You know, I hate to kind of give the kind of easy answer, but to me it is the Atlanta Hawks, and that's only because of the way the team is built. They're built similarly to the way the Grizzlies are. You've got two skilled big men in Paul Millsap and Al Horford. You've got a quick, very good defensive point guard, very unassuming in Jeff Teague. You've got Damari Carroll, who's a long, athletic, defensive-minded guy. And, of course, you got the shooter in Korver who stretches the floor. So I think they're built similarly to the way the Grizzlies are. They play that kind of same style of basketball. Obviously, the stretch offense is a little better in Atlanta, but I think you say that anytime you have Kyle Korver on your team, it's a great stretch offense. But, you know, I do think they give them a hard time just kind of based on how they're built and their ability to kind of match up well against the Grizzlies. I think they'll be a tough out. You know, I think on the flip side, of course, you know, again, anytime you line up Cleveland, LeBron James, put them in the playoffs, it's special. But I think as a whole, as a team, I think the Hawks are going to be, you know, that one team that...
Yeah, I could definitely see that. You know, the Hawks and Grizzlies, they've each beaten each other on their home floor so far this season. So I think personally, just kind of from a guy who loves watching good basketball, it would certainly be fun. You know, you wouldn't have necessarily any of the big-name superstars in the finals that might attract more of the casual sports fans. But I think the guys like you and I that really love watching basketball, a Hawks-Grizzlies NBA Finals would be a lot of fun. Finally, I want to ask you this. I know you keep up with the Grizzlies still, but you're a Nets guy. And just kind of from an outside perspective, what did you think about the Jeff Green trade when it initially happened? And what are your thoughts on it now?
You know, I think it was a good trade. Look, I mean, it's kind of funny because here I am tonight with a mini Grizzlies reunion. We've got Quincy Pondexter starting for the Pelicans tonight, so I get to kind of get that perspective, and Dante Cunningham who played with the Grizz. But, you know, I think to me, you know, when from a perspective of a need, felt like the Grizzlies got the better end of that deal, getting the scorer. Wing scorers have always kind of been a tough find for the Grizzlies, a consistent wing scorer. And I'm not saying that Jeff Green was the absolute right answer. You know, he's not the kind of guy who you're like, awesome, chalk him up for 18 points, 6-4 every night. There's certainly some inconsistencies, but in terms of what the team needs, and if he's able to kind of get on his game and find the consistency, I do think that, you know, they got the better end of the deal because, again, finding that wing scorer has always kind of been a tough find there for the Grizzlies. So I wasn't too, you know, upset about it or didn't think it was a trade that, you know, they lost or they gave up too much or they should have gone another direction. I think for what they got at the time of the trade, I think it was a good trade. And, yeah, there's been some inconsistencies there, of course. But, you know, again, from a perspective of a team covering a team that's 11 games under 500, you know, I think Memphis is doing pretty all right despite the struggles and despite the inconsistencies. I think they're going to be all right with Jeff Green playing the wing for them.
It's a good problem to have, you know. It's a good problem to have, and it's good to talk to folks like you, Tom, who help us keep things in perspective. You know, us Memphis Grizzlies fans, we're starting to get a little bit spoiled by this collection of guys. And the Nets are a great example, and other teams like the Nets, it's all cyclical. There will be a time where the Grizzlies are not quite as good, and we need to enjoy these times while we have them, to say the least. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you're not offended, but because of the layout of the season and because I don't want Oklahoma City to make the playoffs, I'm kind of cheering for the Pelicans tonight. But you know what? If the Nets win, I'll be happy for you still.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually just hoping to see kind of one of those magical Vine awesome moments from Anthony Davis. That's a big win for me if we get one of those wow moments from Anthony Davis tonight. So I'll be happy with
that. I will trade you that moment for a Pelicans win. And both of those things
that's
are good.
Fair enough.
I don't know fair if enough. That's fair for the Nets or not, but it's a situation where, you know, Brooklyn, outside looking in on the playoffs, they're probably long shots, even if they make it to get past the Hawks or the Cavaliers. So maybe it's a good time to hope for some Vines and look to next year. Tom,
absolutely.
Thank you so much. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. We'll let you get back to the game.
Great. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Chip. Good talking to you guys, and I'll speak soon.
All right. Wonderful. Once again, that was Tom Lorenzo. Follow him on Twitter at Tom Lorenzo, an excellent content editor and managing editor over at Nets Daily, and he does a great job with that site. Make sure you're checking it out. Lots of great perspective on the Nets, and it was really kind of him to come on and join us for that segment during the game. For those of you curious, if you're not watching as you listen to the show, it is tied at this current moment, the Pelicans and the Brooklyn Nets, and it's almost halftime. So Tom will have a chance to settle in and get ready for the second half. Once again, you are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, joined by our wonderful producer, Chip Williams. Follow him on Twitter at Chip Williams Jr. And we're about 5 minutes or so away from welcoming our final guest of the evening. But before we get to all that, Chip, we have about 5 minutes here, as I just said. Let's take a look at the week that's coming up for the Memphis Grizzlies. There is no show on Thursday this week. We're airing on a Tuesday because the Memphis Grizzlies are on national television on Thursday night. A game against the Washington Wizards in Washington, D.C., no less. So, A, we're not going to go up against a Grizzlies game because that doesn't make a ton of sense for a show that has a flexible schedule. And, B, I am actually covering that game for the podcast and the site. Going to try to get some audio, going to do a game recap, all sorts of fun things. I'm going to, as we call it here in the D.C. area, the phone booth, the Verizon Center, this Thursday for the Grizzlies and Wizards game. That's why we're doing the Tuesday show. So, Boston, Wednesday night, they're in Boston as they continue their road trip. They're at Washington against the Wizards on Thursday night. I'll be at that game. They have a home game against Milwaukee on Saturday night, which might be the toughest of this stretch. Then they have Denver at home. I'm with Kevin Garnett on the Denver Nuggets. They quit on one guy. They're a bunch of quitters. They'll quit again. Not too worried about the Nuggets. And then Tuesday night, March 17th, they have the Detroit Pistons at Detroit. So five games between now and our next podcast, Thursday, March 19th. What are you thinking of these five games here, Chip? Are there any that jump out at you as possible issues? Obviously, the game in D.C. could be challenging. The Wizards play a similar style to the Grizzlies. You certainly have the Milwaukee Bucks coming up with Jason Kidd. They have long athletic wings. The Greek Freak, for example, Chris Middleton is another. These are guys that could potentially give the Grizzlies some issues, those two teams in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's setting up pretty nicely to where I think, you know, roughly 4-1 or so should be your goal. You know, you probably slip up at one of those, but if you come out of that 5-0, it certainly would not be a surprise. Milwaukee on Saturday, I think, is going to be it's kind of the game that jumps out to me the most. A little bit of a revenge game. If you'll remember, Courtney Lee missed a jumper, I think, to tie or to win in Milwaukee. I mean, this was back, I don't know, maybe in November, so it was right at the beginning of the season. So a little bit of a revenge game. I don't know if those guys can remember that far back. But it's a fun game. You know, Milwaukee is a lot of fun to watch. They've got some fun players on their team. It's always a good time to watch the Greek Freak play. You mentioned Middleton. I guess they have Michael Carter-Williams now. They don't even have Brandon Knight. But, you know, Milwaukee's a tough team. They're a good basketball team, a really good young basketball team, and it seems like Jason Kidd is turning himself into a pretty darn good head coach. Washington will be tough. You know, they've struggled a little bit as of late, but that's a really talented basketball team, and especially going to their place, you just never know. You got to be on your A game, and it's going to be coming off a back-to-back traveling from Boston to Washington, D.C., but you look at Boston – Denver at home, at Detroit, those should be three games that you take care of business. The ones you have to watch out for are Washington and Milwaukee. But you never know. I mean, like I said, I think 4-1 should be the goal. If you go 3-2, it's not the end of the world. If you go 5-0, certainly doesn't surprise anyone, I don't think, because these are five very winnable games. And if you get these five games, you're just going to continue to pad that lead and get closer to maybe – you know, as we wind down towards the end of the season, start resting some of your guys so that you don't have to worry about fatigue come playoff time.
That would be a fantastic thing, because obviously we as Grizzlies bloggers, fans, writers, whatever you want to call us, and obviously fans who listen to this show, we know that there's some media types, maybe even some players who listen. We're all sitting here and thinking, goodness gracious, remember last year when the Grizzlies were basically in the playoffs from January on? This is a nice flip of the switch. The Memphis Grizzlies are in the playoffs. That's not the concern. Now we're looking at the standings and saying, okay, we could win the Southwest Division. We're two games in front of Houston. Okay, we are pretty solidly at least guaranteed, not guaranteed yet, but we're in position to be guaranteed in the next couple of weeks, a home playoff round at least. It's hard to see the Grizzlies falling all the way to the 5 seed where the Clippers are right now with about 5 games behind. They're 5 losses behind in the loss column at the very least. So the Grizzlies could fluctuate between the 2 and 4 seed. It's hard to see them falling past that point. I am interested in seeing this Wizards game because one of the things that folks in the local media have been talking about in Washington is the fact that the Wizards are very much designed like the Grizzlies. 2 bigs in Nene and Martin Gortat that are able to play and be physical. You got John Wall, an athletic, aggressive point guard who made it the All-Star team this year. Obviously, Bradley Beal is kind of the question mark. He's returning from injury these past few games. How he impacts the game is going to be huge for these Grizzlies. And being on national television is always nice. Grizzlies fans are a bit disenfranchised with that because of the lack of attention. But, you know, we have to appreciate when they are on national TV, and it's an opportunity for them to go against a stronger Eastern Conference team in the Wizards. I think 4-1 is realistic. That would be my hope. 5-0 would be fantastic because, Chip, and again, looking back to last year, it's amazing to be able to say this. If they go 5-0 in these next 5 games, that'll put them at 50-18 by March 19th, and there's almost another month in the season left, and they'll already have 50 wins. This is a special, special group, Chip.
It absolutely is. 50-18, and that sets you up, you know, where you only have to go 10-4 to then reach that next milestone of 60 that's never been achieved before. You know, we talked about it over and over. We talked about it early on since the preseason that this is the most talented team that the Grizzlies have ever had or that they've ever put on the floor. And they've just continued to add to that, you know, adding short, small little pieces here and there. Then obviously the Jeff Green trade, you know, you can argue about it, but he's a better basketball player than either Tayshaun Prince or Quincy Pondexter. So they've just continued to get better. The front office does such a great job of putting the right pieces in place. And you know what? Having 60 as an attainable goal is something that's pretty special. You know, as a guy that's remembered all the way back to the 22-60 days and some really bad basketball played by the Grizzlies, having an opportunity to reverse that record and go 60-22 is something that's pretty special.
It is, and we need to continue to appreciate that. Ever since we had Jeff Calkins on the show as a guest, he really kind of opened my eyes to that, and he's exactly right in terms of, you know, appreciate and savor these moments. Even with the playoffs coming, obviously everybody wants an NBA championship here in Memphis and beyond, members of Grizz Nation elsewhere than Memphis. But you also have to be able to sit there and appreciate what this team has done in the regular season. They've had a pretty special year, and hopefully it continues over those next 5 games that we just gave a rundown, on. Once again, you are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. The voice you heard before mine was that of Chip Williams, our great producer. Follow him on Twitter at Chip Williams Jr. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. And before we welcome our final guest of the evening, I want to give another special shout-out to audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. It's a wonderful opportunity for you as a consumer to get a great deal with audible.com, powered by Amazon. 150,000 titles of audiobooks to choose from fiction to nonfiction to biography and everything in between. You can choose, download, put onto a MP3 player, a CD, put into the cloud, however you consume your digital media. Once you sign up, once again, www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues, you get automatically an audiobook download. Once you're a member of the site, 1 a month you will receive, and you'll get to download audiobook after audiobook as long as you're a member with audible.com. Plus, with your membership, Grizzly Bear Blues Live is able to make a donation and will make a donation with your contribution to audible.com to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, a cause that is near and dear to our hearts. We're passionate about. It's an organization that helps young people with life-threatening ailments and their families get the care that they need. Nobody who goes through the doors of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and gets treatment there has to pay for that treatment or their lodging while they are at St. Jude. Obviously, that is not free. They're able to do that due to fundraising efforts and donations from folks. We want to be a part of that process. So once again, www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Help yourself to an amazing service and help an even better cause. Our final guest this evening is an excellent one, and we're excited to have him on. He is of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. He is on Twitter at KD on Hoops. And we, again, are excited to have on this guy. It's the first time that he's been on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, and we hope to have him on again. He is Mr. Kelly Dwyer. Kelly, are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Kelly, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you for joining us. We're very excited to have you. We were just talking before the show and during the show how we really enjoy the Ball Don't Lie blog and the work you do over with Yahoo Sports, so we're excited to have you on for sure. And tonight, Kelly, it's so awesome when we're able to have national kind of perspective. You know, looking at perspective, we as Grizzlies bloggers, Grizzlies fans, we certainly have more of a localized view of our team and how the Memphis Grizzlies are doing. We like to think that they're championship contenders. But you know what? That's not always the case. There are players, maybe folks like Tony Allen more in Memphis than the rest of the country does. That's almost a fact, to be honest. Having listened to other national outlets and now being outside of Memphis myself, people don't appreciate Tony Allen in the greater realm of the NBA like Memphis does. Same thing with Zach Randolph, same thing with Marc Gasol up and down the board. There is an underappreciated end on the national scale, and it varies from place to place and from reporter and media type to reporter and media type. But perception of the Grizzlies, obviously in Memphis, folks want to truly believe that this is the year that they are an NBA championship contender. The national perception of these Grizzlies, Kelly, are they for real or not?
Well, Philbin, you want me to come in here and big time everyone and say that they're a fluke and that Memphis is a nothing city and that, you know, they're just going to get whacked by the Mavericks or the Spurs in the first round? No, I think at this point, it's 2015, people know about Memphis. People know what's going on. You know, they're pretty highly regarded, and you know, I might not be the best guy to you know, objectively talk about the Grizzlies as an outsider because I do own a Tony Allen T-shirt. I do vacation in Memphis more than any other North American city. But, no, people dig this team. People respect the heck out of them. And you know, with these myriad ways that we can follow the NBA in 2015, people know what's up. So it's criminal that they're not on national TV as much. It's criminal that all these – you know, games they have coming up towards the end of the season against these top-flight opponents. They have the Warriors twice and the Spurs and the Clippers and all these great teams. They're not going to be on national TV in any of those games. That's ridiculous. But, you know, outside of that, in terms of people that, you know what's going on, and I'd like to think that I am, you know, one of those people at least 3 out of 7 times a week. No, people respect the heck out of this team, and they rightfully consider them championship contenders.
And that's good to hear, especially the fact that you like to come and visit Memphis and you're a Tony Allen fan. We like to appreciate Tony as well. But it is something that's interesting for these Grizzlies, and I think you're right on, Kelly, with the idea. The underdog mentality that so many Memphians and the Grizzlies themselves perhaps like to feed off of, that's fading away slowly but surely. You don't get to be the second seed in the West and claim the underdog status. These Grizzlies are now playing the role of favorites, and there's a bit of concern for fans as to how that's going to play out. I mean, the Grizzlies rarely have been favorites in their time in Memphis. How is this going to play to you? How do you think the Grizzlies are going to handle this role? They're no longer the spoiler or the underdog. They're really at the point where they are expected to make some noise in the Western Conference playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways because, I mean, as you guys know, they always had an excuse. There were, you know, they were only in the third round because Westbrook got hurt, or they were only advancing because, you know, they shocked the Spurs or they had a great matchup. And yeah, they've been the spoilers so far. But on the flip side of that, everyone with fans of any Western team, and this is especially the case if you know, teams in Portland and Dallas were healthy, you know, and mind, body, and spirit, I guess, in the case with Dallas, people have to realize that even though the Warriors, you know, may finish with 60-some wins this year, the West is the West. And if it takes Memphis 7 games to dispatch Dallas or San Antonio or, you know, whomever they take in the first round, that's okay. Dallas took San Antonio to 7 games last year. It wasn't because San Antonio was slacking or that they were, you know, playing down to the underdog or because they couldn't handle, you know, their role as the favorites. It's just that Dallas was a really, really good basketball team that probably should have taken San Antonio to 7 games. So I'm not saying Memphis fans should be okay if the team gets bounced in the first round or if they go out in the second round after, you know, 5 really close one-possession games but just end up as a, you know, 1-4 disadvantage. They shouldn't be okay with that, but it's the West. It's the greatest conference ever. So I can't, you know, you're going to have to handle, you know, that stuff isn't going to matter in the last 2 minutes of the game in May, but in terms of, you know, taking on the season as a whole and looking back on it, you know, it's possibly the Grizzlies, you know, last great chance of this roster to you know, to win a championship. I wouldn't be overly disappointed if, you know, things don't go all the way. It's just how great this conference is.
We're talking with Kelly Dwyer. Follow him on Twitter if you don't already, at KD on Hoops of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. And you make great points, especially about the idea that this is probably the last great chance for the grit and grind era Grizzlies to make a run to the finals. And I think that's what has people so nervous. Again, talking about local perspective, there's been a lot of tension in Grizz Nation, especially on Twitter and on the blogs and message boards. There's a lot of folks that are tense, Kelly. I think that the expectations are bringing out the worst and the best in some, depending on how you look at it. And the perception continues to be a challenge when it comes to the major acquisition of this year, Jeff Green. He has been a lot more controversial, if I'm being honest, than I ever thought he would be. I thought that it was a slam dunk no-brainer that you change out Quincy Pondexter and Tayshaun Prince for Jeff Green, and boom, upgrade. But there are a lot of folks in Grizz Nation, again, this is kind of the local perception and perspective, that Jeff Green has been a negative addition to the Grizzlies, that Tony Allen should be starting, Jeff Green at best is a backup power forward. The idea that they shouldn't have given up the first-round pick, they shouldn't have made that move, they are not any better than they were before. And there is some ground being gained by that movement. There are great local basketball minds like Chris Harrington of the Memphis Commercial Appeal, also does some work for ESPN's True Hoop. We've had him on the show. He's very respected in the Memphis Grizzlies community and abroad. His great work is starting to be paid attention elsewhere. And Mr. Harrington has come out and said, Jeff Green has been a disappointment. Now, he's had some better success recently. He has been kind of fitting into a new role where Tony Allen subs for him first off of the bench, and then Jeff Green plays more backup power forward, which offensively, at least, he seems to be more comfortable there for sure. But Jeff Green, the national perception is that it was a win, slam dunk, great trade for the Grizzlies. Locally, it's more of a, I don't want to say 50-50 split, but that's how it feels. Why is that? Why is the national perception of Jeff Green so much different than the local one?
You got to give both sides merit in this case. You know, people, fans forever have been confused about Jeff Green. It's the reason he's bounced around. He doesn't put up the sort of stats you'd expect from a fifth overall pick, but he's not a, you know, this sort of no-stats all-star guy that people that are into advanced metrics, you know, obsess over. And yeah, he's been a polarizing guy everywhere he's gone because he just doesn't really fit in anywhere. And, you know, yeah, I mean, just switching between forward positions, he's just a tough guy to understand as a basketball player because, you know, his three-point shooting has not ticked up since he's come to Memphis, and it also hurt that Tayshaun Prince was fantastic as a three-point shooter for whatever reason once he went to Boston. And, you know, he's not a lockdown defender. He's not even a good rebounder for a small forward, and yet he's playing all these minutes of power forward, where that probably, like I said, might be the best position for him in a lot of instances. So he's always going to be this polarizing figure. I don't know a lot of people that were calling it crazy over the top. So maybe I'm not listening to reading the right guys or, you know, listening to the right podcast, but I didn't see a ton of people calling him a slam dunk win, I like the trade because, you know, they had to try something. And I understand that in the end, even if Green was absolutely killing it with the Grizzlies this year, that this was going to be a loss of the trade for Memphis because, you know, that first round pick will mean something down the line. But I think that front office went into there knowing that. So, yeah, I mean, Chris Harrington's brilliant and he's spot on about it. And Green has not been average with the Grizzlies so far this year. He's not had a good season, but you have to try something. And, you know, Green reads like that sort of guy that, you know, the cameras pan over to the bench and at the end of a game six of a playoff series where a team's getting eliminated and, you know, you show that guy's face and you remember that, oh, yeah, we made a big deal about, you know, trading for this guy earlier in the season, trading for Jamal Mashburn to go to the Heat or something like that. So he reads like one of those players, but, you know, he could give them a wrinkle. He could give them a transition finisher. He could, you know, have a weird out-of-nowhere 4-for-7, you know, night from behind the arc sometime in May. So you have to take that chance with Gasol and Randolph getting up there in age. I don't think the Grizzlies front office was the biggest Jeff Green fan in the world prior to this trade, but, you know, when it becomes available and you have that, you know, last-ditch chance at a championship, you take that calculated risk, and, you know, I'm still in favor of it.
They kicked the tires on Lou Aldang, obviously, before the deal went down, so there's certainly validity to the idea that he wasn't their first choice. But as you said, a move had to be made, and it's a situation where they're maximizing what they could have done. It's a first-round pick. You hate to give those up. But at the same time, it's 4 years down the road, 5 years down the road. You're not going to have Zach Randolph and Tony Allen on this team during that time. You're going to be in a different phase to begin with. So it makes sense to kind of go all in now, especially once you have all of these pieces together guaranteed for this run. Jeff Green, the past five games, as you said, he can get hot and kind of spacey and in and out as a shooter from three especially. He's actually shooting pretty decently from three the past five games, shooting 33%. His shooting percentages are still low compared to his career and regular season averages. The past 10 games, he's just now shooting 41%, which is below his career average of 44, but kind of in line with his 42% run. So he's shooting better, comparatively speaking. He's still finding and feeling his groove. And Dave Yeager, the head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies, may have finally found the best way to use Jeff Green. I don't know if you've been able to watch many of the recent games, Kelly, but he's found a way to get Jeff Green out early, maybe the first 5 and 6 minutes of the game. Tony Allen is the first sub, so T.A. still getting minutes with that starting unit of Conley, Lee, Randolph, and Gasol. And then Jeff Green re-enters the game with the second unit, and he is the backup power forward. He's taken the minutes from John Luehr, but he's getting a lot of run alongside guys like Beno Udrah, Nick Calathes. Obviously, Tony Allen is still in when Dave Yeager goes with his all-second unit team, and then Kosta Koufos. And he's had success in that role. He's shown some point forward flashes. You talked about his transition scoring. He's been able to do that. A big part of the question with Jeff Green for fans in Memphis is, should he start or come off the bench? Is it possible that Dave Yeager has found the compromise?
Well, I mean, they've split their last eight games, so in terms of overall win-loss, you know, it hasn't truly panned out. But, yeah, the idea of making him the sixth man that actually starts is, you know, I mean, that makes sense. And as we've seen, his assist totals aren't through the roof, but his assist ratio has gone, percentage has gone up, you know, pretty significantly, but a fair amount since he joined Memphis. And yeah, there is the idea that, you know, he can get lost in the flow on that sort of team. And yeah, I mean, it completely makes sense to try to mess with things in February and March before, you know, things get haywire, before the pressure goes up. So he's just an odd player. He's just a unique player that never seemed to have a home. And to me, it's all about having that guy. I know he's not the greatest, you know, he's not Daryl Green out there, but just to have someone that can leak out in transition and, you know, be part of that 9-2 run that helps a team pull ahead with, you know, 4 minutes left in the second quarter. And you know, for, like you said, a 2019 or whatever the conditions are going to be, first-round pick, you got to run with that right now. So they've got another, you know, 6 weeks to figure this out. I wouldn't mind, you know, he's taking minutes from John Luehr. It's just not, you know, it's not the end of the world to try to, you know, maybe fall flat on your face, because with the way they played for the first however many months of the season there, you know, they've earned that capital to kind of goof around and see how they're going to fit moving in the spring.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live podcast. I am the producer, Chip Williams, joined as always by host Joe Molinax. We're talking with Kelly Dwyer. Follow him on Twitter at KD on Hoops. Kelly, I want to ask you about kind of this crazy Western Conference. You know, we knew that from the very beginning of this season that this was a loaded Western Conference and there was going to be a lot of jockeying for position. And now that we're here, you know, just about a month away or a month and a half away from playoff time, there's going to be a lot going on now with in terms of teams trying to get higher seeds. Where do you see the Grizzlies settling once the dust settles in the Western Conference and everything's all said and done?
I can't see them falling out of the second seed. I mean, I know they've gone 4-4, but I think I heard you guys talking about it before I hopped on here. They've got a pretty solid, pretty easy schedule coming up in the next couple of weeks before they have to take on, you know, Warriors, Clippers, Spurs. I think they have the Warriors twice, so they can make some hay. And it's really hard to see them, you know, falling out of that second spot. Houston has done, you know, some fantastic stuff this year. Houston is, as you know, their work and Harden's work with Dwight Howard, you know, with whatever he's working through, has been truly impressive. But two games this deep into the season, especially for a team like the Grizzlies, it just isn't going to go off the rails. You know, knock on wood here. I cannot see them passing it up. And you know, they're obviously not going to be able to catch the Warriors. Or just, you know, somebody was Chris Vernon the other day. The fact that Memphis has won 45 out of 63 games and they're still 5.5 behind the Warriors is just, it's ridiculous. It's the modern Western Conference, and it's just how these things shape up. But I it's going to take quite a bit to dislodge them from that second seed.
Well, so, okay, you see the Grizzlies settling in at the 2 spot. That back half of the Western Conference, when you talk about 7, 8, 9, and maybe even 6, 7, 8, 9, that's going to be interesting to see who gets in and who gets left out. Who do you see settling into that seventh spot and ends up as a first-round matchup for the Grizzlies?
You know, I don't say it's chic. It's maybe chic among the most NBA nerds that it just can't help but stare at the standings all day like people like me. But it's just to wonder if the Trailblazers are going to get a little despondent, if they're going to get, down after the Wes Matthews thing and tumble in the standings. But that's a long way to tumble. As great as the Spurs have been recently, you know, for the Trailblazers, dropping 4-7 will be a lot. The Mavericks, I have no faith in, to be honest. Rick Carlisle is a brilliant coach, and it would not surprise me if they upset someone, even the Grizzlies, possibly in the first round. But in terms of getting their act together in the regular season, you know, and finishing out a tear, that would really surprise me, because they're just two completely disparate, you know, ways of you know, enacting an offense in Rajon Rondo versus Carlisle. So, to me, it's got to be Dallas. I think they've got to be that seventh seed. Spurs are getting their stuff together. Tony Parker's playing brilliantly. You know, Duncan's been rested all year, and he's had a fantastic defensive year. And, you know, even if the Thunder do get Durant back, and I kind of don't want them to get Durant back anytime soon, because I want that guy to take his time with that foot injury, which could be, you know, pretty career-altering if he comes back too quickly for it. Even if they come back and they just start mowing down opponents, I can't see the Thunder, you know, making up that much ground this late in the season. So, yeah, to me, it's just got to be Dallas, the seventh seed.
Do you think there's any chance that OKC ends up missing the playoffs, or you think they're going to secure that eighth spot?
Credit to the Pelicans. They've been hanging in there, and they've had plenty of reasons with, you know, all of their, you know, guys out to curl up and die. But they've been hanging in there. They're up double figures on the Nets right now as we speak, but that's just, you know, they're a half game back, but at some point the Thunder have to be the Thunder, you know, at some point the Thunder have to be, you know, Westbrook's not going to continue to do this, but you know, the Thunder have to hang on to that seed. And I mean, can you imagine the outcry if Durant actually decides to, you know, without an actual, you know, stress fracture break that they can show the media, if he decides to sit out the season or you know, to wait until the playoffs to come back? No, he's going to come back at some point, which worries the heck out of me, because that's a significant fracture that just, you know, should be scaring everyone. But, you know, Thunder, I hate going down that they've been here before, you know, sports writer sort of trope with this team, but, you know, they've been there before. They've hung on to an 8 seed in the first foray into the playoffs, it was 5 years ago, and you know, they'll be fine. I respect the heck out of what the Pelicans have done recently, but it's got to be the Thunder moving forward.
We're wrapping up here with Kelly Dwyer of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. Be sure to follow him on Twitter if you do not already, at KD on Hoops. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Molinax, joined as always by my wonderful producer, Chip Williams. Kelly, we'll get you out of here on this. you know, going back to that idea of perspective, the perspective of the Grizzlies as the championship contender, the perspective of Jeff Green as that confusing enigma, which I think is pretty fair at this point. You argued well for it, 3-4, whatever he might be. And then the Western Conference itself, perspective is interesting because you see the Golden State Warriors being so dominant, and yet there's an opportunity if the Oklahoma City Thunder make the playoffs as the 8th seed that the Thunder might be favored in that series if they're healthy. So it's a situation where perspective really is kind of the theme of this segment, and it comes down to a guy who at the beginning of the year, in a very foolish way, it would seem now in hindsight, I wrote an article about Marc Gasol and asking whether or not he was truly worth a max contract and the idea of what it meant to be a superstar. 60 games into the season, there's almost no, it's guaranteed at this point Marc Gasol is going to get, almost guaranteed I should say, that he's going to get that max deal from the Grizzlies because of the season he's had, all-star starter for the first time in Memphis history, all of those fun things. But even with all of the numbers and even with all the success he's had, and there has been increased attention for Mark, even Grizzlies fans who are the most disenfranchised with the national media have to admit there has been more attention for Mark in particular than there has been in past seasons. Depending on your definition of a superstar, like Russell Westbrook having the season he's having and the run that he had in February, he's a superstar. Kevin Durant, when he's going, superstar. LeBron James, Steph Curry, James Harden. These names go on and on. Guys like Anthony Davis who are rising up those ranks. Is Marc Gasol a superstar? And does it even matter if he is or isn't?
Well, I guess I should cop to this before I even get into the, you know, that aspect of things. I've got you beat on the making poor early season. I wrote once a year when I have to figure out who's good, you know, the playoff brackets and try to, you know, put together win projected win loss records for team. I pick one team every year that I think is going to be like one sprained MCL away or one high ankle sprain away from missing the playoffs or dropping down a bunch of wins, and not quite randomly, but pretty randomly because they're a pretty thin team heading into the season. I picked the Grizzlies. I actually picked them to win a bunch of games but miss the playoffs to be that one team that does that every year is between them and the Suns. So, and that's just how the West is sometimes, and that's okay. And you can ask, you know, anyone who writes about the Grizzlies, I'm an unabashed, you know, they're usually my second favorite team out there. In terms of Gasol, you know, I don't think it matters anymore. This is a guy that won the Defensive Player of the Year in a year where he didn't even make the All-Star team. He averaged 7.5 rebounds a game. I mean, it doesn't really matter. And maybe that's just because I'm in my little NBA hovel where I don't really, you know, I'm not lording over what they're saying on Pardon the Interruption or anything like that. And I don't really pay attention to, you know, I do pay attention to the fact that they're not on that, the Grizzlies aren't on national TV, and that they, you know, the second seed in the West should be, you know, there was always the potential that they were going to be the second seed or even the top seed in the West because 1 through 8, when healthy, every, you know, great Western team had the chance to do that this year. That's just how great the West is. So I do get a little angry at that, but in terms of, you know, the idea that he's not as, you know, lauded over as someone like Westbrook, that's fine. I mean, that's okay. At the end of the day, you have a 7-foot guy in his prime that is playing expertly on both sides of the ball. Obviously, his offense has shot up this year, but, you know, to me, the defense has gotten better as the seasons move along. He's, you know, turned the ball over a little bit more this year, but it's not a huge spike, and he's been brilliant. And you still have writers talking about him as a fringe MVP candidate, and stuff like that wasn't happening, you know, even 10 years ago. So, I mean, it's a different era. There are different people, you know, covering these things and creating these silly narratives that we obsess over every day. So at this point, you know, I think all that went out the window when, you know, they put a guy who's barely on national TV and is averaging, you know, 1.5 blocks and 7.5 rebounds a game. They made him the Defensive Player of the Year. That's just, you know, that's just how we cover the league in this era. So I think that's fine. And I really don't think it matters whether or not he ever trends on Twitter. We have, you know, Westbrook and his crazy stats for that. And Gasol just have to, you know, fall asleep on the pile of money from his max contract and the knowledge that he might be the most brilliant two-way player in the NBA today.
And the amazing thing about this, and we talk about appreciating the Grizzlies for what they are in this regular season run, I think it's also important that fans appreciate where the NBA is right now, because you make a good point. The old guard of the Tony Kornheisers and Michael Wilbons, and I love the PTI example because growing up in Washington, D.C. and living here now, I mean, those two guys, you know, I followed them and read them before they were ever national personalities. You know, they were D.C. sports writers, And those were folks that I looked up to growing up in terms of writing and getting into this blogging and podcasting thing that I do now. Those are guys that I looked up to. But that old guard is starting to shift out, and players like a Marc Gasol, who aren't your typical all-star, superstar, dominant, pay-attention-to-me, flashy guys, the fact that he got Defensive Player of the Year is really amazing, because it's a sign that people are starting to pay attention more to the game inside the game. The fact of understanding rotations, the fact of defensive presence in the paint, the use of metrics and analytics to be able to understand the impact that somebody can have on a game really is remarkable, and we're really at a crossroads in basketball and other sports, or catching up or are further ahead, depending on how you look at baseball, when it comes to understanding the metrics of the game and how they correspond and correlate with how the eye test goes. So Marc Gasol doesn't jump out at you. Marc Gasol is not a guy who's going to be flashy and wear crazy clothes and demand that star power. But as you said, he is still just as dominant as a two-way player as just about anybody in the NBA, and the fact that he doesn't necessarily get the attention for it is okay, because in a roundabout way, as time goes on and as the appreciation of guys like Marc Gasol and teams like Memphis develops, they are going to get that attention. That's just kind of the way the league is trending.
It's why I love this team so much. You know, you guys have John Hollinger in your front office, and yet this team has one of the 26th in pace. They never shoot any three-pointers. You know, we talk about how Gasol may not be doing the flashy stuff, but he's playing a type of basketball that you know, your 80s obsessed dad who, you know, never watched the NBA after Jordan left would fall in love with all manner of running hooks and moving without the ball and all sorts of craziness defensively. So it's just this weird back and forth between – they're just a great basketball franchise right now. And, yeah, enjoy this because, you know, this has just been a fantastic run. And the novelty behind it, the novelty that you're only in the third round because Westbrook is out, and the novelty of you're the plucky eighth seed, the top of the, you know, the big bad Spurs, that's gone away. And, again, it could end just, you know, 3 weeks into the postseason, or we could have, you know, something on Beale Street in late June. I mean, I'd love to drive to that. So, do enjoy it, but also understand that it's good to feel things. It's good to feel consternation about Jeff Green. It's good to worry that this might be the last chance for this group. It's good to have that little pang of fear, because that's better than what was in place, you know, when Lorenzen Wright was pulling down 25 rebounds in their third game in 2001. That's better than, you know, what was in place when, you know, Jason Williams was, you know, wearing stupid T-shirts and saying terrible things to columnists. It's better than what was in place when everyone was getting on Pau Gasol and not playing through a broken foot. It's good to have these, you know, even if they're nagging, even if you're worried about stuff.
There's something there. It's really come a long way, and you just gave a great rundown of some early history of the Memphis Grizzlies. It's come a long way, and I'm telling you right now, Kelly, if there is a championship parade on Beale Street, I'm going to be driving down there with you, and the beers on Beale will be on me. That will be an amazing scene. And
the Dyers are on me.
Oh, there you go. Then I'm in if you're throwing in the Dyers. There you go. Kelly Dwyer, thank you so much for joining us. Great perspective. Really appreciate it, and we'll have to have you on again in the future.
I'll be around. Take care.
Thank you, Kelly.
No problem. Cheers.
Once again, that was Kelly Dwyer. Follow him on Twitter if you do not already. Most folks do, I'm sure, that are listening to this podcast. But if you don't, at KD on Hoops. He is of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. Tremendous work they do over there. And I really enjoy following Kelly. He has great perspective. And like I said, Chip, in that last segment, it was about perspective, whether it be the perspective of the Grizzlies nationally, whether it be the perspective of Jeff Green. And I thought he nailed it on Jeff Green, to be honest. That was awesome. In terms of him just being, you know, he's a confusing guy. There's a reason why there's such debate about Jeff Green, because he's kind of confusing, and he's kind of out there, and folks are still trying to make what he is. And then obviously the points on Marc Gasol. At this point, I'm over the superstar or not argument. He's a Memphis superstar. He's a guy that folks are depending on if these Grizzlies are going to be champions, and that's enough for us here in Memphis. And Kelly made a great point on that as well.
Yeah, Kelly, he does a great job always, and he did it again tonight. I think, like you pointed out, his take on Jeff Green I thought was really good, is that there's just not a whole lot of black and white, you know, just kind of how it is. This is Jeff Green. This is who he is. This is what you're going to get. you don't really know what you're going to get. You know, it's interesting. He looks the part. He sometimes he plays the part very well. Sometimes he doesn't. And there's a lot of, you know, discrepancy in terms of how people view him. You know, you pointed out that the national media has seemed to love Jeff Green and love his addition to Memphis, and the local media has been a little bit harsher on him, and so has the local fan base to some degree. And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, but honestly, the truth, there's probably truth on both sides, honestly, with just the way that he plays. You just don't ever really know, you know. Anyone could be right on Jeff Green any given night, it seems like. So I thought that was great. I thought the Marc Gasol stuff was great. Kelly, he's a really smart guy. And, man, Joe, we continue to roll out the great guests.
We're lucky here. You know, we obviously started Grizzly Bear Blues Live as a podcast over a year ago, went away for a couple of months, and Chip took it to the radio for a little while, and it grew a good bit, even in the short time it was on the radio. Coming back on the podcast side of things with Blog Talk, it's been awesome. We really have been fortunate to have some great guests, and hopefully that'll continue as we head towards the playoff push for your second-seeded, ladies and gentlemen, Memphis Grizzlies. Pretty cool to still be able to say that. Keep that in mind. Keep perspective. As we wrap up Grizzly Bear Blues Live on this Tuesday night, hopefully you've enjoyed the live broadcast. If you're not listening to the live show, hopefully you are enjoying the podcast and you've been checking out all the great work from our writers and contributors over at grizzlybearblues.com as you've been listening. Next week, Thursday, March 19th, is when Grizzly Bear Blues Live will return to the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. The Memphis Grizzlies play Thursday night, March 12th, against the Washington Wizards. We don't want to go up against the Grizzlies game, of course, because our audience, hopefully, is interested in that game. Plus, I will be covering the game in person for Grizzly Bear Blues. I'll be writing the full recap for that game. I'm hoping to get some audio from some of the players and Coach Yeager at that game on Thursday night. So that's why the show did not air in its usual Thursday time slot. It will be back Thursday, March 19th. We tentatively, depending on his schedule in Bristol, have Amin El-Hassan returning to Grizzly Bear Blues Live for that show. The great guests keep on coming. Amin has, you know, since we've had him on the show and since I had an opportunity to be on True Hoop TV After Dark a while ago last year, it's really been a great thing for him. It's really kind of blown up for Amin. He's been on ESPN. He's been on SportsCenter. His role is growing there. So we're excited to have him back on the show, talk about these Grizzlies, and hopefully talk about a 50-win team, which is on the table. Amazing to think on March 19th they could have 50 wins, but it's possible. It's there if they go 5-0 in this next stretch. 4-1 is probably more realistic, but let's hope for 5-0 if you're a fan of the Grizzlies. Once again, audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Sign up for an audible.com membership powered by Amazon, and you'll help us make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Make sure you're finding the podcast version of the show. Obviously, there is a Grizzly Bear Blues Live recap that goes live on it's usually on Fridays. It'll be on Wednesday this week, the recap of the show that featured Kelly Dwyer and Tom Lorenzo. Make sure that you're subscribing on iTunes. That's a development that's come out in the past week or so. Excited to announce publicly that Grizzly Bear Blues Live is now on iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast. Never miss an episode. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Just search Grizzly Bear Blues Live, and we will pop right up. So subscribe on iTunes to the podcast. Thank you so much to Chris Faulkner, as always, a great guest in the first segment with Grizzly Bear News. Thank you so much to Tom Lorenzo for the great perspective on the Eastern Conference of Nets Daily. Thank you so much to Kelly Dwyer of Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie blog. Great, great, great thoughts on Marc Gasol and the Jeff Green situation here in Memphis, as well as the special team that these Grizzlies are. And of course, as always, thank you to my wonderful producer, Chip Williams. Happy to have him along with me, as always. Ladies and gentlemen, the next time we will be on the Blog Talk Radio airwaves is March 19th, Thursday night. Hopefully, we're talking about a Grizzlies team that has 50 wins and is starting to slowly but surely secure and solidify their hold on the second seed, and we can start thinking more and more about potential playoff matchups. Until that time, continue to check out grizzlybearblues.com. Continue to follow on Twitter, at GBBLive, looking for updates. Be sure to follow me on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. And from both accounts, there will be updates from the game Thursday night against the Washington Wizards. Excited to be covering that for the site. Lots of big things happening, ladies and gentlemen. Continue to stick with Grizzly Bear Blues for all of your Memphis Grizzlies needs. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Ladies and gentlemen, grind forth, Grizz Nation. This has been Grizzly Bear Blues Live.